Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI Podcast is brought to you by DSL Extreme at DSLExtreme.com. Hi, this is Leo, and this is my KFI Podcast. This show originally aired on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles on Saturday, June 3rd, 2006. This is show 253.
June 3rd, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
Thank you, Deborah. And good morning to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy on KFI. Oh, I'm so glad to be here. So much to talk about in high tech. That's what we do for the next 3 hours. As I mentioned to Bill, we'll talk about the new dual-core laptops. They're hot in more ways than one. We'll also talk about news, the latest, not just computers either in technology. It could be everything from the Nintendo DS Lite, which I've got in my hot little hands right now, and I'm very impressed with, to cell phones, to camcorders. I talked with Bill yesterday about the new Motorola Q cell phone. I'm playing with that too. Wow, is that slick. It's all food for conversation. If it has to do with technology, we'll talk about it. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Let's talk a little bit about the Vonage stock offering. I'm feeling bad for some people who thought they were going to make some money and who have gotten a kind of bitter lesson in the stock market. Vonage, the voice-over internet provider, thought they'd be nice and offer 10,000 of their best customers in on the initial public offering. Now, in years past, in the in the tech boom, that was the goal, right? That was permission to mint money. You get in on these IPOs, and even the Google IPO, the most recent big tech IPO. If you got in at the ground floor, what was it, 100? No, it wasn't even that. Was it 65? I can't remember what it was. It was cheap. It's now up to almost $400. But that, you'd make five times your money, six times your money. People like tech IPOs. But usually, the institutional investors and friends and family get kind of dibs on those first shares that are sold. So Vonage thought, well, we'll do nice things for our customers here. We'll give you 10,000 of you a chance to buy it at the offering price, the initial offering price, $17 a share. Ooh, what a deal. So 10,000 customers ran and took advantage of that. And then what happened? The stock tanked. Within just a couple of days, the $17 a share stock was down to $12. They've lost more than 30% in their value. Oops. Now, since this was a customer relations gambit, you'd think the company would say, oh, wow, we're sorry. Well, you don't have to buy the stock. They can't. They can't. They kind of have to force you to pay for it. Vonage has said the customers who agreed to buy the initial public offering at $17 a share have got to go and buy it at $17 a share, even though the stock is worth a lot less. In effect, throwing away $5 a share. Under the terms of the program, the contract the customer signed, quote, if a customer was allocated shares in the customer-directed share program, that customer is obligated to purchase their share. It's clear we have not offered and are not offering to repurchase. That's what it would be. If Vonage said, oh, okay, you don't have to pay the $17, it would mean that Vonage would have to eat it. Now, Vonage has, and there may be a little loophole here, has agreed to pay the banks that underwrote the stock offering for any losses arising from customers who refuse to pay for their shares. Now, that's not typically in the agreement. So it may be that Vonage is saying, oh, you have to pay. Yes, you have to pay. And winking at you at the same time. I don't know. I'm not sure I'd want to find out. I think a lot of people got a lesson in the realities of the stock market. It's not always a good thing to be in on that IPO. I think Vonage is a good company. I use their service, but it's a very competitive arena, and there's no guarantee they're going to continue to succeed. And I think the market is probably right in saying it's not worth the $17. But I'd hate to be one of those people who thought, you know, this is where greed bites you, doesn't it? Oh, we're going to make so much money. Ouch. Ouch. That's got to hurt. Pirate Bay is hurting. This is the tracker, a BitTorrent tracker. Let me explain what a BitTorrent tracker is. BitTorrent is the technology that the motion picture industry both loves and fears because it allows people to distribute huge files without having any big bandwidth costs. In effect, everybody who's downloading the file shares the bandwidth cost, and since enough people are, you know, doing it all at the same time, it's minimal. That's BitTorrent. It's really kind of a cool technology. I use BitTorrent to distribute my very largest podcasts, you know, the video podcast, the big high def one, and some versions of my audio podcasts as well. And that way I don't have to pay bandwidth costs. It's absolutely free. The Motion Picture Association of America doesn't like BitTorrent too much because it's also used to pirate television and movies almost exclusively. If you've got a 2 gigabyte movie file, you're not going to want to spend the money to offer it to everybody. But if you put it up on BitTorrent, well, it costs you nothing and everybody can get it. So what does it take to make BitTorrent work? Well, of course, you have to have the original file. You have to make a special little BitTorrent meta file that goes with it. It's not very big, just a few K. That file says what file you have, where it is. And that little file, not the big file, you put up on a BitTorrent tracker. That's a website that people can go to. And if they're looking for a file, they go to the tracker and they say, oh, do you have that file? And the tracker gives them the little tiny meta file, which then their BitTorrent software says, ah, I've got the meta file, and works with the tracker to find sources for that file, what they call seeders. And then once you've downloaded the file, unless you close BitTorrent, you become a seeder too, and you help others download it. It's a cooperative network. But it requires, at least in most cases, there's a new form of BitTorrent that doesn't, but most BitTorrent up to recently required a tracker, a centralized server that would keep track of all of these files that are available. At the same time as the motion picture industry has been investing in BitTorrent and trying to co-opt it, because they realize it's a good technique. I mean, it is a good way of distributing movies. They've been shutting down the pirate trackers. They've been going around and putting them out of business, threatening them with lawsuits. Well, there's one that always mocked them. A site in Sweden called the Pirate Bay. Arr! Arr! At thepiratebay.org. In fact, when they got the cease and desist letters from the Motion Picture Association, the recording industry, the record labels, TV companies, they would actively mock them. They'd put the letters up on the website and laugh at them, mock them. Say, under Swedish law, we're immune. Go ahead, file your lawsuit. Ha ha! We don't care. They gloried in their piracy, saying we're untouchable. Whoa. Maybe not. Last week, Swedish law enforcement raided the Pirate Bay in Sweden. They took all their servers. They brought it down. They shut it down. Maybe because of a new law passed by the Swedish Parliament. I'm not sure how it works, although the Pirate Bay and other advocates, including, by the way, a party in Sweden called the Pirate Party, claimed that it was undue influence from the U.S. government on this, that the Motion Picture Association went to the U.S. government, which went to the Swedish government, which said, all right, we'll do it for you. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just a prejudice of mine. And I know it's not true, but for some reason, I see the Swedish chef in all of this, you know, from the Muppets. And it's hard for me to take Swedish police seriously. You're coming to get your servers. Here we come. And I know that's not true. And I know that's my own personal failing. But I just can't help it. Seeing the Muppets coming and raiding the Pirate Bay. Pirate Bay says it's illegal. And not only that, we've got backups. We're going to set the servers up offshore in another country where they don't have these laws, and we'll be up and running again in a few days. In fact, if you go to thepiratebay.org, it says the site is down, we'll be up and fully functional within a day or two. Actually, let me, you know, I haven't checked them today. Let's see. Have you gone to thepiratebay.org? Thepiratebay.org. Let's see what they say right now. Oh, yeah, they're back up. I'll be danged. They're probably not in Sweden anymore. But they found another server, and they're right back up. And it just shows you that even, I mean, it's like cockroaches. Even if you shut these guys down in one country, you just go to another. In fact, I'm looking, yeah, the legal threats page is back up from all the different companies and their responses, mocking them, laughing at them. It's interesting. They have a graph that has, you see, their claim is, and you know, I think this might be a legitimate claim. We actually don't have any of these pirated files. We don't store these files. They don't. A tracker doesn't store any pirated files. All they store and offer is these little meta files that allow you to find the pirate files. So they're helping people. They're certainly aiding and abetting piracy. But I think their position is bad. But we're not actually committing piracy. We're just providing a centralized place people can go to find these files. The fight rages on, doesn't it? I have to say, I've used the Pirate Bay. It's a pretty blatant piracy site. I mean, there's just no question about it. And it's not just movies and music. It's software. I mean, it's blatant. And I think, you know, it's unethical. It's immoral. It's wrong. There's not any gray area here. But the point to be taken away from this, I think, is that it's almost impossible to stop. They just went somewhere else. Unless you get every nation in the world, you get 180 nations to sign, and they're trying to do this, to try and sign these agreements to say, you know, yeah, we'll arrest these guys. But there isn't that kind of unanimity around intellectual property. That's why sites like allofmp3.com in Russia still are around. Because Russia, through a loophole in Russian law, they're able to offer, much to the chagrin of the music industry, they're able to offer all sorts of millions of songs for free. Or basically for a few cents a song. Artists don't get paid. Nobody gets paid. But it's legal in Russia. Well, it looks like the Pirate Bay is back up. Interesting. Let's talk about piracy. We could talk about... a little later on, I'll talk more about this Nintendo DS Lite. Oh, boy, do they have a winner here. The next version of the Nintendo DS. It is slick. Great sound. And I've been playing a game called Brain Age, which I have to say I'm really enjoying. Brain Age trains your brain. It tells you how old you are mentally, and then it trains you, you know, to be sharper. And it's fun. And I think it might actually work. It's from by a neuro somebody or other. We'll talk about that. 1-800-520 a little later on. 1-800-520-1KFI. Computer problems, internet issues. You want to know more about certain phrases or technology terms you hear? You have a thought about piracy? Give me a ring and we'll talk about it. 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
KFI News.
Fox News.
Together bringing you the big stories.
KFI AM 640.
1126 on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Let's get right to the phones. A lot of calls. Got a lot of catching up to do. Mark and Diamond Bar, welcome to KFI.
Mr. Leo.
Hey.
I got my MacBook.
You did?
Yes.
Congratulations.
So I had to join with my iMac Core Duo, but I made a big boo-boo.
Uh-oh, what'd you do wrong?
Well, since I only got the base model with the 512 RAM.
Right.
So I thought maybe I should borrow one of my 1 gig sticks from my iMac and stick it into my MacBook.
Ah. Did that work?
The problem is my MacBook won't boot now.
Yeah.
After I put it in.
So you took it back out, put the old one back in?
Yeah, and it boots then. But now the...
Well, it's the wrong RAM.
No, it's also... Isn't it also DDR2?
Yeah, but it's got to be exactly that. I mean, there's that's not enough.
Oh.
Apparently. I don't know. I mean, I'd have to look up what the MacBook... It uses SODIMMs, DDR2, but, I mean, it could be the speed is different. I don't know. Do you think you fried it?
I think that's what I think.
It won't work in the iMac?
Sure.
It won't work in the iMac now?
No, it won't boot in that, too. So did I kill it?
Could be. Could be. Uh-oh. Yeah, it could be a little static. You know, RAM is sensitive to static. One thing to do is do a parameter RAM reset on the iMac by holding Command, Option, P, and R down while you boot. Okay. And then it'll bong. And then you do it again. Bong. Keep doing it. Keep holding it until it bongs three or four times. That resets the parameter RAM. That's kind of like the CMOS on a PC.
Oh, okay.
And that kind of, that keeps information about what memory's in there and so forth. Did you start the iMac without the stick in?
Yeah, I did. I did with the existing 1 gig in there, and it
so
still
could
works.
Be. It could be. Well, it's possible that you fried it. Yeah. I haven't looked at what the, you know, it's not merely enough to say you've got DDR2 SO DIMMs. Mm-hmm. The bus speed is the same. I think it's both 667.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's why I thought
but,
I could switch
I mean,
over.
There are more parameters to RAM than that, although it shouldn't fry it.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like what happened is that at some point some static hit. RAM and all chips are fairly sensitive to static. Static doesn't hurt us because it's very low amperage, but it's very high voltage, and a little tiny thing like a chip could be damaged. Let me do look up and see exactly what kind of RAM both machines take and see if there's a mismatch. But it sounds more like maybe a static zap. Sorry, Rick. That's an expensive thing to zap. We're all little monkeys, aren't we? We just got to try things. Just got to play with it. I understand the temptation. 11:29, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Deborah Marks in the KFI News Center. Unbelievable! That's what people say when they hear how little DSL Extreme charges for high-speed internet. But believe it, it is the lowest price in the country for high-speed internet. I hope you're sitting down. You ready? $12.95 a month. And as if that weren't enough, now they're giving you the first month of service absolutely free. Now, you may say, well, there's got to be some catches, some strings. You know, what other services do I have to buy? None. Do I have to pay for the modem? No. Is there a setup fee? No. That's it. $12.95 a month. Oh, I get it. It's just for a couple of months. No, it's guaranteed for a year. $12.95 a month. DSL Extreme's my internet service provider, so I'm kind of proud of them, and I can vouch for them. A great deal for great service. No spam, no viruses. You don't tie up your phone lines. What more could you ask for? $12.95 a month. Some restrictions do apply, so call 866-2-GET-NET right now. 866-2-GET-NET or visit them online at dslextreme.com. High-speed internet for only $12.95 a month, and the first month's free only from DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET.
Captain Dale Dye, tomorrow evening, 5 to 7 p.m., KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to be doing the show live from Bel Air Camera. It's their camera expo in Westwood. It's going to be the day before Father's Day. So 2 weeks from today, June 17th. 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. I hope you'll come by and say hi. We're going to have a great time. Bel Air Camera, I'm sure you know. I mean, they've been around 50 years. They're one of the great names, one of the great camera stores in the world. I'm really happy to be part of them. Very knowledgeable staff. They're our new sponsor, I'm really happy to say. We're going to have a special question. First, we're going to do the show 11 to 2, but then I will do a special question and answer session. I'm talking about buying a digital camera, what to look for. We'll start with the point and shoots and go all the way up to the digital SLRs. So it's going to be a lot of fun. June 17th, day before Father's Day. If you're looking for a camera for a dad or a grad, this will be a great way to learn more about them. Always great prices and lots of information. You can log on to KFI's website for more details. KFIAM640.com. While you're there, click my name under the shows and you'll find my lovely page underneath my lovely picture, the official website. That takes you to the show notes website. And they were a little behind from last week because I didn't have any show notes from last week. I was out of town. But I will be updating them and getting them back in shape. And of course, I'm putting notes up from today's show as well. So you can get there and find out more about the things we talk about, links and so forth, and even post your comments. Again, that's KFI640.com. I'm sorry, the new URL, KFIAM640.com. And then click my name under shows, Leo Laporte, and then you'll want to click the official website. That takes you to leo.am. If you're looking for the page itself, it's leo.am. Also there, link to the chat room, audio archives, there's tips, there's a glossary, there's listener profiles, there's a lot of information there. All that stuff is available at KFIAM640.com. You know, I did some research for Rick. I feel bad for Rick. It is exactly the same memory in both the MacBook and the iMac. It's a PC2 5300 DDR2 SODIMMs. So, you know, it's not that he zapped it by putting the wrong memory in there. If it fits, usually it's fine. It might not work, but it shouldn't zap the memory. Now, Dan in our chat room, who also has a MacBook, says that it is a little finicky getting those sticks in there. I suppose it could be if you put it in, and there could be a stray electrical charge that might have zapped it. RAM is fragile, but all of that seems fairly unlikely. I'm hoping just resetting the parameter RAM will help him fix that. I'll talk more about the MacBook. I've been very happy with it. Now that I've had it for, it's almost 2 weeks. No, it isn't. Is it? Yeah, it's almost 2 weeks. I got it on Monday of 2 weeks ago. So I'll give you some more information about it. But I have to say, I've been very happy with it. It is hot, but not too hot to handle. I mean, all of these Core Duo laptops with these new Core Duo chips, they're all hot. Any modern chip's going to be hot. Let me think what you've got in there. You've got dual 2 gigahertz processors in effect. And they're stuck on one die. So they're close. They're in cramped quarters as it is. Sure, it's going to be hot. And that's true for any Windows Core Duo machine as well. So it really comes down to how well the company has designed the cooling systems, whether the fans are well designed, well timed, because that's in software, you know, it's in the firmware of the laptop, whether they'll draw the heat off. But I have to say, they're fast. And the battery life's great. Intel's gotten very good at making fast, powerful chips with good battery life. 2 gigahertz processors in this laptop, and I'm getting 3 or 4 hours, which is about double what I was getting from the old PowerBook. And we're seeing similar results on Windows Core Duo laptops. This is a well-designed chip. Intel did a very good job. And while I was one of the first people to whine and moan and cry about Apple moving to Intel, now, in retrospect, I was wrong. It was a good move. This is the fastest Mac I've ever used. Not just laptop, fastest Mac. Now, I had for review the Intel-based iMac, and it's roughly that speed. The Mac Mini that I bought, the Duo Mac Mini I bought, is a little faster because I put a faster hard drive, and it boots from a faster hard drive. The Mini, as well as the MacBook and the MacBook Pro, all run off laptop drives, 5400 RPM laptop drives, but laptop drives are slower. And that was a good thing to do on the Mini, is to have it boot from an external drive that's faster over FireWire, and it did speed up the machine. But these are both very snappy machines. Not the 4 to 5 times faster Apple's claiming, but noticeably faster. Probably 50 to 100% faster. And depending on what you're doing. Let's move on to more of your calls. Ryan is on the line from Boston, Beantown. Hello, Ryan. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. What can I do for you?
Quick question for you.
Yeah.
I just bought one of the new Toshiba Gigabit portable media centers.
Mm-hmm.
They're running Windows Mobile,
mm-hmm.
and I can't seem to get any of my TV shows that I copy from the Media Center won't play on it.
They won't play on the portable device.
They won't play on the portable.
You're using the dock and doing the syncing as prescribed,
yeah,
and all that stuff?
Yeah, I'm syncing through Windows Media Player, and it converts the files, and it copies them over, and they're on the device, but they just won't play on it.
So that's the key. You can't just copy them over. So you are following the procedure.
Yep.
What happens when you try to play them?
The time bar comes up at the bottom of the screen, but it's just a black screen.
And these are files that you recorded with Media Center?
Yep.
Oh, boy, I can't think of any reason why that's supposed to work, right?
Yep.
The only thing I could think of is maybe check and see if Toshiba has a firmware update for you.
Because I'm using a Toshiba laptop, too, so I figured the two and two together would be, you know?
Yeah, well, one would think, wouldn't you?
Yep.
The Gigabit's pretty new.
And it said when I copy them with Windows Media Player, it says converting files to the portable device too.
Yeah, it has to do that. It has to convert it to a format. Although, I'm just trying to think of what could be that something's going wrong in the conversion. But you are using the latest version of the Windows Media Center.
Windows Media Center. I'm using Windows Media Player 10 to convert.
And using 10. Yeah. And that's all I could think of is updating everything, you know, updating the firmware on the device, updating the firmware on your laptop, making sure you have the latest of everything. And the only thing I can think of is that there's a version mismatch because that's all supposed to work.
Yeah, it's supposed to work together. Right?
Yeah, I mean, if that's the promise that Microsoft offers, you know, that's the price you pay for Microsoft's monopoly is that it should all work together because it's all Microsoft. I can't think of why it wouldn't. And the only thing I can think of is, have you looked online to see if other people are having similar trouble?
These are so new that there's really no reason.
Brand new. Yeah, they're really slick looking.
Yeah, I got the 60 gig black version.
You got the black? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually always liked the PMCs. I thought they were a great design. And I think Toshiba's really.
Yeah, you want to be able to use it, you know?
Yeah, well, of course you do. Have you played any other video on the Gigabit?
They have a couple of videos preloaded on the thing, and that plays fine. But when I try to sync any of my own stuff, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds almost for sure like a codec issue.
Okay.
And so that's why I would go online. You know, there's Gigabit has its own website, so I don't know if they do support out of that website or not. But I would go online.
Could I be converting them wrong or something like that?
Well, yeah, but it's automatic, right? You don't tell it what to do. It's supposed to do it all right.
Yeah, and that's it all by itself.
Yeah, I think what's happening is it's not converting it. It's a couple of possibilities. One is it's not converting it right, but more likely the Gigabit is missing a codec that it needs to play back.
Okay.
And I mean, that's exactly what you get is a blank screen.
Yeah.
And so I think what you probably want to do is get online and see if there is an update for the Gigabit.
All right.
I bet you anything that's going to do the trick. Because, I mean, that's the whole point of this. What he's got is, you know, he's got Windows Media XP Media Center. So he's using that as a TiVo to record his shows and so forth. And the whole idea of these portable media centers, these PMC devices, is you've got a dock. And you can this. I mean, this was the promise of the whole thing, because you know everybody understands that on the one hand, the motion picture companies don't want you to take those movies off the TV; they're deadly afraid of that. But on the other hand, that's what consumers want. We want, you know, that's the fight, right? The battle. How do you protect Hollywood and still let us put these movies on our portable devices? Well, the whole premise here was, we can figure it out because we'll have end-to-end, it'll be Microsoft, with end-to-end Windows Media protection, the copy protection. It'll all be transparent to the user. He'll dock the thing. Windows Media Center will convert the files to the right format for the portable player because it doesn't play the same format as the desktop. It has to be recompressed. Once converted, it'll copy them on there. And there's even nice features like if you've watched it, it takes it off and puts the new show on. You know, you can have all these rules. That's the promise of it, but it doesn't work well. It's got to be an update. That's all I can think of. And these are brand new. They're really slick. They're the second generation portable media centers, and they're very, very slick. But it's this, you know, it's this plays for sure stuff. It's this copy protection. Kills you every time. Good luck, Ryan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:47.
Dr. Dean Adel, this afternoon at 2.
KFI AM 640.
11:54 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I want to congratulate my good friend Bob Heil, who is being added, an exhibition about him is being added to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this week. Bob is an old rock and roll sound guy. Did sound for The Who and many great bands. Just a really, I'm glad to consider him a friend. Is a great ham. I don't mean a ham actor, although he does ham it up with his purple sneakers. But he's also a ham radio operator and kind of retired to that and realized there weren't any really great microphones out there. He said hams need better microphones. Now, I know a little about microphones as a sound guy for years. He designed a bunch of great microphones for hams. The exhibit at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is going to include all sorts of interesting things, including the quadraphonic system he designed for The Who to do quadraphenia, the concert system. He also did the mouth thing that Peter Frampton used in Frampton Comes Alive. You know, he was the guy who got the Grateful Dead into good quality sound, changed their life. And he's changed mine because he gave me a few months ago, he gave me a great microphone, his Heil PR40 microphone, which I use for the radio show all the time. And it's just a fantastic microphone. And now I use it for all my podcasting. One of the best microphones I've ever used. And it's affordable. He's just an unassuming great guy. So congratulations, Bob. He's going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and rightly so. Let's go to Dave in Northridge. Dave, welcome to KFI. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hi, Leo. I'm fine. I just want to thank you. You and Amber have inspired me to make my own podcast.
Congratulations. That's great.
And I've been a DJing for about 15 years doing weddings and corporate events, and now I'm doing podcasting. So I have a lot of good microphones, like Shure, and I want to know, do I use an external mixing board to go into to Audacity to make a good podcast?
So you're going to record into your computer.
Into my laptop, correct.
So that's the trick, because a laptop or any computer, you know, sound card has an analog input. Sometimes they have mic in line, sometimes they just have line or mic. But no matter what, those are not going to work just hooked up to a microphone.
Exactly. I have great Shure microphones I've used for my wedding business, so I want to know, do I go ahead and spend the money on a USB mic and do it that way?
I wouldn't. If you're happy with your mics, what you really probably want to get is a microphone interface, computer microphone interface. M-Audio and a lot of companies make these. What they do is they have XLR inputs. That's the kind of connector your mics have now.
Right, right.
And they go to USB. And so, in effect, they're sound cards. That you can get them with mixers built in. You can also, it depends on whether you want to mix before you record or mix after you record.
Yeah, that's the thing, Leo, because I've been doing some actual recordings now, and I know, like, when you do your show, you know, it's not just interviews. Sometimes you have other clips you want to play, and you can't do that with Audacity. You need some type of, like,
you need a mixer.
Producer.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, and so I have a fairly expensive setup because I do the radio show, so I have a big Mackie Onyx mixer, and I have a lot of, you know, elaborate stuff.
Exactly.
But I don't think you need to spend that much to be a podcaster. You can get an inexpensive microphone to USB interface from people like M-Audio. I think M-Audio's is very good, but there are a lot of other. Apogee makes more expensive ones. A lot of companies do these. They start at $100. That'll get it into the computer, and I think pretty much that's how to do it if you're going to mix in the computer. In other words, you'll record each track into Audacity and then use Audacity or your software to say, this one's louder, this one's softer, and so forth. And that's usually how I do my podcasts. I record everything at the same level and then mix it in the software. If you want to mix it with a mixing board where you have a lot of inputs, well, then you're going to need to get something more elaborate. You can get a standard analog mixing board that you put the microphone in and then have it out. That's what I do. It outputs via FireWire to my computer. That's what the Mackie Onyx does. We're talking about $1,200 though. You can also get relatively inexpensive mixers that have USB interfaces, and I think that's probably the best way to go. You know, audio is one of those things you can spend as much money as you have or want, but I don't recommend it. For most podcasters, getting a simple, inexpensive USB mic, and we did a good Mac break on that, the Snowball or the Flex mic, for under $100, we'll give you really a lot of what you need if it's just simple voice. We can go on and on, but one of these days I have to put this all together. I'll tell you about an academy coming up where you can learn all about this. Podcast academies in just a couple of weeks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:59. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
June 3rd, 2006.
It's 82 right now in Los Alamitos, 82 in Santa Ana, 92 in Burbank, and 84 in Marina del Rey. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 12:06, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, Jessica. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. We're talking about tech, talking about piracy, talking about the MacBook and the Nintendo DS Lite. I've got one on loan just for a couple of weeks, and I'm going to want it back. I'm going to want to keep it. I know I am, from Nintendo. This is the newest DS. Smaller. Feels more solid. Feels like, frankly, less of a cheesy game machine. Feels like a really nice device. And I have to, the price is, I think, going to be $129. Should be in stores soon. I think this week or next, just in time for Father's Day. And a great Father's Day gift. I thought this was a kid's device when I first saw it. And sure, there are a lot of kids' games and Mario and so forth. But I, you know, for dad, there's great golf games. I'm playing Brain Age, which I think anybody would love. It's a training program for your brain, and it's kind of fun. The idea is there are a number of different math, word, visual games. You'll play it when you first get it. You'll go through a little test, and it'll give you your brain age now. And I'm told most people, when they first play Brain Age, their brain age is in the 80s. All worn out. I'm proud to say I was 38, which is about 11 years younger than my actual age. So I think I'm in good shape. I think this job keeps my brain pretty nimble. But what happens then is, after you get your first assessment, is that they say use it 2 or 3 times a day. And train your brain. So some of the games are, the first one they give you is, and I think I found this pretty easy, but apparently people find it difficult, is they show you words that are colors, yellow, black, red, blue. But the words are written in different colors, and they say, tell us the color that you see, not the word. So they'll be yellow written in black letters, you're supposed to say black, or blue written in red letters, you're supposed to say red. And I guess some people have a difficult time looking at the word red in blue letters and saying blue. I didn't find it that difficult, but I guess people do. That's one of the things. And there's a lot of little tests. There's one where they show you a group of 4, 5, 6, 7 numbers very briefly for about a second, and then ask you to put those numbers in order from lowest to highest. I found that challenging. They give you math problems, read out loud. It really uses the DS well. The DS has two screens. It has a touch screen and it has a display screen. It also has handwriting and voice recognition. And that's key to this. Of course, it needs voice recognition, for instance, for the color test. And it does a pretty good job. My son had a little harder time with it. They couldn't understand it when he was saying blue. I don't know why. I think the score was lowered because of that. Maybe that's why I did well. Because I was pronouncing it very precisely. Blue. It is a lot of fun. This is one of those games that any age could play, and it's very addictive. They have Nintendo Dogs, which is like the old... Remember the Tamagotchis, where you would have a creature in a little gadget, and you have to feed it and pet it and keep it alive? Well, the Nintendo Dogs is kind of the next generation of that. I have to say, I think this is going to be it's really interesting to see what's happened to Nintendo, going from kind of an also-ran. All the attention was going to Sony and Microsoft for the PlayStation 2 and 3 and the Xbox and Xbox 360. Everybody's paying all its attention. Nintendo just quietly working in the background. It's the old tortoise and hare, quietly, you know, making good stuff. And what happens? The PSP, the Sony PSP, it's kind of a flop, frankly. Was slick, beautiful, expensive. I bought one. It's in a drawer somewhere. And meanwhile, the DS, the Nintendo DS, which I had for review also and kind of poo-pooed, it's turned out to be a real sleeper, a real winner. And I think this DS Lite is going to be huge. All the attention going to the Xbox 360 last year and the PlayStation 3 this year. And then, lo and behold, come E3, the big gaming conference last week, a couple of weeks ago. Nintendo gets all the attention for its Wii. And everybody seems to agree the Wii is going to be the game machine of the Christmas season, the holiday season. What an amazing company to have come back from nowhere. Now, this all remains to be seen. I can tell you, having played with Brain Age and the Lite, the DS Lite, this is going to be a very big product this summer. They're timing it just right. It's coming out, you know, early June, just in time for Father's Day. The price is right. Graduates, kids are going to want these for the summer. These things are going to sell like crazy, like hotcakes, if you can get one. We'll have to see how well the Wii does when it comes down to it. But that's going to be affordable, too. $150 compared to the $500 and $600 for the PlayStation 3. I think a lot of people are going to take a look at the two and say, I guess I'll get the cheap one. Kids won't know the difference. Yeah, maybe the graphics aren't high def, but who cares? It's a fun game. It's fun. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. I know at least one person who's actually got his DS Lite. Dan, our chat room moderator, ordered his from Japan weeks ago. Have you got one already? And have you played with it? What do you think? 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number. David in Whittier, welcome. Or is it Whittier?
Well, I was driving through Whittier, but now I'm home in Corona.
Oh, all right. Corona's good. What can I do for you, David?
Leo, it's nice to talk to you. I have a home theater question for you.
Okay.
I just upgraded my home theater, bought a new projection, a front projection TV, front projector with a 96-inch screen.
Great.
And, yeah, I'm really happy with it, and I've kept most of my components, which I'm also happy with, except for one, and that's my DVD player.
Mm.
I currently have a Toshiba DVD player that's a progressive scan that I bought about 6 or 7 years ago. I'm looking to upgrade it, and looking at the new HD DVD players, again, Toshiba, which I just really liked a lot. It was a beautiful picture. Problem, of course, is you have to buy the HD DVDs, and
it will play it will play the old DVDs, by the way.
Right. I found that out. But the problem is I'm not sure which way I should go. Should I hold off in purchasing something like that, especially with the Blu-ray technology war that apparently is going on?
Right.
Should I go with a DVD player that's an up converter that'll up convert to, say, a 720 or a 1080i at this point? I'm not sure which the best way to go. Should I hold off?
That's a great question. Yeah. Bought my upsampling. When I bought my HDTV, I bought an upsampling Samsung that gets it up to 720p, and I've been very happy. I think it looks very good. But it's not going to look as good as the HD DVD. I would suggest the price difference is significant. The Samsung is $150. The HD DVD is $500. So there's one difference there. I would look at the two, though, and see if you see enough of a difference to warrant it. There aren't a lot of HD DVD titles yet. As you said, there's going to be a split in the formats. There's going to be Blu-ray and HD DVD, and some titles come on one and others on the other, which means if you want to have, play all the HD high-def DVDs that come out, you'll need two players, which is crazy. There is some question as to why there aren't hybrid players that play both, and no one's really sure. One company has promised them but hasn't released them. My buddy John C. Dvorak says the reason is, he might know too because he's very good on this kind of stuff. He has great sources. He says, you don't know it, but the licensing agreement for HD DVD or Blu-ray that a company like Toshiba would sign prevents them from making players for the competitor. You can license HD DVD, but the minute you make a Blu-ray player, this license is null and void. Now, that's maybe true or may not. Nobody's talking about what their contracts say. But it just means that this rift, this battle between these two formats is going to go on for a while, and there's no easy way for the consumer. There's some other things to consider about the HD DVD that you might not notice in the store. For one thing, is it's got a slow boot up and load time.
Oh, really? No, I didn't.
Yeah. Get them to take out the disc and put a new one in.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's frustrating. It's 30 seconds to a minute. It's really a long time. This thing is essentially a computer. It's running Linux. It's got a hard drive. I mean, it's a powerful computer.
Right. So you're happy, though, with your the one that upconverts?
I feel no drive at all to buy an HD DVD player. But what I would suggest doing is go to the... Well, for one thing, I can watch, every movie is out on DVD, and they all look pretty darn good with the up converter. But I would say, my eyes are not your eyes. I would say go to the store, and if you can, get a side-by-side comparison with something like the Samsung and the Toshiba, and see if you can tell the difference. You can. You really can, especially if you're looking for it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how important that is. Now, you've got a 96-inch screen.
Right.
You're going to see it. You're blowing that sucker up big.
Yeah, it is. And it's really nice. I mean, it's nice at the 480, but, you know, with that HD, I fell in love with the picture. It was just awesome.
Right.
Just awesome picture. So it's a tough decision.
Certainly want to upgrade your DVD player, the very least to an upsampling 720p player. The good news is the Samsung's $150. I think it does a great job. It's not expensive. I mean, there are a lot of companies that make these, but I like the Samsungs a lot. You know, a video file might tell you otherwise, and if you really care about this stuff, you can read the video file magazines. I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool video file. Yeah. I'm just a guy who likes to see, you know, I like it to look good.
Yeah, I hear you.
You spent a lot of money on that front projector and the 96-inch screen, so you may be willing to spend $500 for the Toshiba. I think right now that makes you an early adopter, a bleeding-edge early adopter. This just came out last month.
Right, I know. And I'm at that point where I'm more confused than when I started, so I thought I'd go to the man and talk to you. So.
Well, I don't know if I've cut through the confusion.
No, you have.
But there's some information for you that might help you make the choice.
Right.
If it's my money, I don't buy an HD DVD player yet. I just think that we haven't seen the end of this battle.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
And the first one is not going to be as good as later ones. So what I would do, if it were me, I would buy the upsampling DVD player. You got to have that. It'll make all your DVDs look better. You don't have to buy new DVDs. They'll all look better. And wait and watch and see. If somebody in the fall offers a dual format player, then you'll be glad you waited.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, thanks, Leo. I appreciate all your help.
My pleasure, David. Thanks for hanging on for so long. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1218.
Information doesn't take the weekend off.
Neither do we.
KFI, all weekend long.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. I wanted to mention, I forgot I was going to tell everybody about the Podcast Academy that is coming up. Now, unfortunately, it's in Northern California, not in Southern California, although I think we may be doing more of these. It's from the folks at IT Conversations, Podcast Academy 3. It's June 15th through 16th in Santa Clara at Yahoo. That's $275 a person. So it's really for somebody who really wants to learn how to do podcasting. And there's courses on podcasting gear. That's done by Paul Fagiani, who does The Point, which is a great podcast about podcasting gear. Michael Gohagan from Real Reviews is going to do Podcasting 101. Lots of really neat stuff. We'll be doing TWIT, my big podcast, This Week in Tech, live at 1:30 on Friday, June 16th. So if you want to know more about Podcast Academy, you can go to itconversations.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. And I think there is still room there. It's not, you know, it's not cheap. I realize it's a little expensive, but it's a two-day conference. So it is tax deductible. If you ever make any money on podcasting, you'll be able to deduct that money from the profits. But I think it's certainly a good way to learn. They've done so many of these now. This is the third one. They've really learned the ins and outs. And Doug Kay, Michael Gohagan, Tim Burkin. We'll talk about advertising sales. Eric Rice on the future of podcasting. Some of the biggest names in podcasting will be there. Don Loeb from FeedBurner. So I thought I'd give him a little plug for that. Reminder that the show notes are online at KFIAM640.com. I'm putting them in as quickly as I can. There's usually a lag of a half an hour as I type these things up and put them in there. But you can also add your own thoughts and comments as well if you want to, you know, beat me to the punch. Go to KFIAM640.com, KFIAM640.com. Under shows, you will see, all the shows on KFI. Click my name, Leo Laporte. Oh, they got a splash page now. Oh, I hadn't been there in a while. Okay, so let me make sure it's still working. Oh, yeah, it's easy now because you see my picture right on the front page. So just click that picture. That'll take you to my special page. And then you see under my picture, the third link is official website. And that takes you to leo.am, the show notes website. Click Saturday show. That's today, June 3rd, 2006, show 253. And the show notes will be in there. And I'm a little behind, but I'm typing them as we talk. I'll get more of them in there. Also, a good way to find out about the chat room, the sponsors. We've got forums. We've got a blog. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. It's all linked there. You can even leave me a voice message on Odeo. I know I haven't been using many of those. I used some last week. I've got to get a system so I can use those on the show. And we'll get some in before the show's over today. It's 12:29, and that means it's time for news. We'll be back with more of your calls. 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
Handle on the news, warts and all, Monday morning, 6 to 7.
KFI AM 640.
12:37, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ahmad is on the line from Glendale, our next caller on KFI. Hello, Ahmad. Welcome.
Hello. My computer is running on Windows XP Professional with Surface Pack 2, and it has 4 gigs of RAM.
Okay.
But Windows doesn't seem to be able to recognize more than 2.17, and it was my understanding Windows XP Professional should at least recognize 3 gigs of RAM.
Nope.
What can I do?
It's the hardware. It's the motherboard. There's nothing you can do.
It's a brand new computer from Alienware.
Does Alienware say you can see more than 2 gigs of RAM?
No.
I would ask them. So if it isn't necessarily the operating system, it could be the motherboard as well. How is your RAM populated on your motherboard?
The way that it looks, it's written here, 4 gigs of dual-channel DDR2 SDRAM at 667 megahertz.
That's what the Alienware people are saying.
Right.
Well, then it should work. Now, you have to put... I mean, it's really common that the hardware is not going to be able to see more than 2 gigs of RAM. But you have an Alienware, which is a high-end gaming machine, and you have a late model Alienware.
Yeah, it's brand new.
Yeah, so I would call Alienware and say, what's the deal? Windows can see, you're right, 4 gigabytes of RAM. Very common that motherboards won't let you have more than 2. Now, one thing I might ask you is why you want more than 2. Yeah, it won't make any difference. Unless you're doing, are you doing Photoshop with giant images, or you're doing 20 programs at the same time, or some reason that you need all that memory?
No, it's just being crazy about getting speed.
You won't see a lot of speed difference. If you've made a graph of the speed of the computer versus the amount of RAM, the big jump, of course, is from 256 to 512. That's a big steep slope. Then a less steep slope from 512 to 1 gigabyte, and then really tiny incremental improvements over 1 gigabyte. If you've got 2 gigs in there already, I know you bought 3.
I bought 4.
You bought 4.
I got... It came
from Alienware with 4?
Yes.
Well, then they screwed up. You call them and say, dudes, how do you know what you're seeing? How do you know how much RAM? Is it in the... you're looking at my computer?
We looked there, we even opened up the box, looked inside, there was 4 1 gigabyte SDRAM cards in it.
Oh boy, you'd think if Alienware put the sticks in and sold you the machine as a 4 gigabyte machine, that it ought to see them. So when you go to the system properties and it says how much RAM there is, it says 3.17, not 4.
It doesn't even say that, it says 2.17.
Says 2, not 4. Well, I think you have to call Alienware. I think that either they've misconfigured it, there's something wrong, you have 2 bad sticks, but there's something wrong. And, you know, the issue is, you're absolutely right. Windows does see up to 4. Most computer motherboards tap out at 2, because frankly, there's not a lot of reason to have more than 2. If Alienware can't solve it, I think what I would do is I'd say, hey, dudes, I want to send back 2 of these sticks because I don't need 4 anyway. 2 gigs is a lot, and I defy you to tell the difference between a 2 gig machine and a 4 gig machine. And in fact, there are situations where more RAM actually slows it down. I mean, that's excessive. Alienware is that way, though. They'll sell you excessive hardware. It's a company that is aimed at people who want to pay top dollar to be able to say, I've got more RAM than anybody else. It's not necessarily faster, I have to tell you. David, Orange County, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, David.
Hello, Leo. I'll try to keep this brief and not give you any of the boring details unless you ask.
All right.
I have about a three-year-old compact laptop, and it froze up on me.
Oh, dear.
So I went to reboot. It wouldn't reboot. Put in the... I have a CD that I created to be able to boot from CD. Didn't recognize it. Put in the system disk. You've got an option to repair stuff, so I chose that option.
So it's not completely frozen. It's actually running.
Yeah, well, the computer will run. It just won't recognize Windows. And I put in the system recovery disk. Got a bunch of CRC errors there. That wouldn't run.
Okay.
Tried to reinstall Windows from the system disk, and that didn't work either. Now, I called a couple of tech places and talked to a couple of pretty savvy guys who said, you know, maybe it's not the disk drive, because I checked the drive.
What'd you check it with?
I went into BIOS and used the drive check.
Yeah.
And it said it was fine. I can pay $100 to have the system checked and have Windows put back on. If something else is wrong with the computer, I'm out to $100 anyway. Or I can just buy another computer.
It sounds like the hard drive is dead. I don't think that system hard drive check is necessarily telling you anything of use.
Okay.
It sounds like every time you try to do something, you get errors.
Right.
And including installing Windows. When you tried to install Windows, did it just fail, or did it give you any? Did it say, I can't copy a file? Did it tell you?
No. What happened was, when I tried to install Windows, it gave me my partitions. You know, you can choose this one or that if you want to, and use the down arrow key or enter.
Right.
The keyboard locked up.
Oh, the keyboard locked up.
And I've tried to do that several times. And
oh yeah, it does sound like your computer's dead. Your computer's not doing too well, because at that point it's not even running Windows. It's just running it's running a DOS program, and it's still not handling it. And it's running it out of memory, not off a hard drive. So it does sound like there is something more seriously wrong with your computer. What could that be? Well, it could be a lot of things. It could be something as simple as, you know, something has shaken loose. And they could open it up and say, oh, yeah, we'll just push this. It's fixed. And it could be something more serious. It could be there's a component failure. And on a laptop, when a component fails, often there's not much to do to fix it except replace wholesale parts. The other thing, it could be a battery issue. It could be that it's not remembering what it is. When you're in BIOS and you're doing the various BIOS setup stuff, does it seem to operate pretty reliably there?
Seem to.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, it could be memory has, you got some failed memory. You know, the DOS programs just occupy the first 640K of memory. So if there's something wrong in memory above a megabyte, it might not even impact those programs, but it might well keep anything more sophisticated from running. So in other words, there's a lot of things that could be wrong.
Yeah.
$100, is that a full diagnostic? Are they going to tell you what's wrong if they pay?
Yeah, they'll tell you what's
and they
wrong.
And they count it against fixing it?
No.
They don't?
Nope.
Well, the truth is, and that's probably because what happens most often is you pay $100 and they say it's a $1,500 repair. And you go, okay, I guess it's time for a new laptop.
Forget that.
Yeah. It is three years old. I think most laptops, 2 or 3 years and out. To be honest with you.
All right. Bite the bullet and just buy another computer.
It's going to be a lot faster, a lot more reliable.
Well, true.
Probably more secure. And, well, again, you know, I can't tell you. It's a gamble. And I can't tell you what your odds are. It's just impossible to know what's wrong. It could be something very cheap and easy to fix. But as I just listed five different things it could be, and there's no way of knowing if it's anything.
Well,
yeah.
I didn't think you could, and that's the reason I asked. What do you think? Should I pay $100 and maybe good money after bad, or get a new one?
How inclined has the computer been fine up to now?
Yeah.
And it does everything you want it to do?
Pretty much, and I've had, I haven't been using it as a laptop for, you know, I haven't used it portability for 2 years now. So I'm just basically using it as a desktop.
Do you want to get another laptop, or are you willing to get a desktop?
No.
Well, so you can get a desktop for probably much less than any repair would be on that laptop.
Well, okay.
And I think you'd get a more reliable, better machine if you got a desktop.
Probably would.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for the advice.
That's what I'd be inclined to do, is bite the bullet. 3 years is a good amount of time for a laptop.
All right.
All right. Hey, thanks
Very
for the
good.
Call.
Thanks, sir.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Yeah, laptops don't last as long. I said this a couple of weeks ago. They don't last as long as PCs. Now, if you've never taken it off your desk, I guess it would. Although, even then, it's under greater stress because it's hotter in there. Everything's jammed in. So even if it's just sitting on your desk, it's not going to last as long as a PC. And I find if you carry it around, 2 or 3 years is really pretty much, you know, that's when they start to fall apart. They get banged up. Even if you're very careful, very gentle, they get banged up. They get slung around. They experience G-forces in your bag. I mean, that's the way it is. Laptop's life. It's a hard life. 1247, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Matt Drudge, tomorrow night, 7 to 10 p.m., KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI at 1254. Let's say hi to Pari in Palos Verdes. Palos Verdes. Hi, Pari. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing great. You are my weekend hero.
Good to talk to you again. What's the latest?
Well, the latest is I wanted to know if all FireWire is created equal.
You mean cables?
I'll tell you what I mean.
Or cables or chips?
Well, the signal. Well, I'll tell you what is what I've been trying to do.
Okay.
My friend has got a Macintosh iMac running on OS 9.04 with iMac, the iMovie 2.
Okay.
It only has a FireWire import.
Yep.
And I've got two different Sony mini camcorders. Her husband's got a Panasonic mini DV. All imports great.
Okay.
And she can edit great now. But she doesn't have an analog breakout box or patch bay.
Right.
So I get her this ADS box.
Right.
And what happens, she imports and it just freezes into a freeze frame, seizes the whole thing up, and it's over.
Yeah.
And they claim, well, it's because FireWire signal is not all the same. And I'm going, what?
Who is they? ADS claims that?
Yeah.
They say there's something wrong with what's going into it?
Well, they claim that the output, although it's supposed to be compatible.
Oh, yeah. You know, because it's an older iMac, there could be some truth to this.
Really? It's FireWire? I just thought the FireWire was a standard signal.
It is a standard, but there's different chipsets implementing it, right? So different, I'm going to build a computer. I'm going to put a mm-hmm. FireWire connector on the computer. I will go to a company and buy a FireWire chipset that mm-hmm. will support FireWire. And there were two or three common ones in the time frame. If you're running OS 9, this is a fairly old iMac.
Mm-hmm.
So in the time frame that they made this iMac, there were several choices. And in that day and age, I'm remembering back to the good old days. I do remember that we would frequently have issues mixing and matching FireWire devices. Some chipsets worked better with some devices and not in others. So it could be a mismatch between the ADS box and the particular FireWire chipset on that iMac motherboard.
Is that the signal or the codec coming down the wire?
It's not software, it's hardware.
Really?
It could be. I mean,
even though three camcorders work great, so I went and got a Canopus instead.
Did the Canopus work?
I don't know yet. I haven't been able to go and check it out, but I want to just find out if they're lying about FireWire signals.
No, it's not the signal. It's the chipset. It's the way it's implemented. And again, I think we've
expand on that.
Huh?
Could you expand on that? I don't understand that.
Yeah, I understand. By the way, it's all gone away lately, you know.
Oh.
But in the earliest days of FireWire, which this iMac dates back to, when you would make a computer, you know, to make FireWire work, you have to have a chip on the motherboard that is actually connecting the FireWire connector to the motherboard. And that chip handles the signals. It does the work. Same thing with USB. There's a USB chipset. That is the hardware component that makes that connector work. Unfortunately, because, especially when you're doing FireWire, where you have a lot of data coming through a serial port, timing is so critical. some of the early, and it's as I said, it's fixed now, but some of the early FireWire chipsets were not compatible with each other. Mm-hmm. So a FireWire device might not have worked with all FireWire chipsets. This truthfully was more of a problem on PCs than Macs.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so I don't know if there's an issue, and it could be that ADS is using, you know, they're kind of low price. I mean, they're fine, but they're kind of a low price company. They might be using a less compatible FireWire chipset on their device. I don't know. But my suspicion is because it's the old Mac that it's probably the FireWire chipset that Apple put on there.
Okay.
The Canopus might work. And again, that's the issue, is that it's a compatibility between two chipsets.
Well, what would you recommend that you think will work?
Oh, I can't tell you because I don't know what the issue is exactly. You need to kind of, and I could do some research, and I will for you.
Okay,
on which
that.
On which chipset was being used. You can do this for yourself. There are a couple of great sites for old iMacs. You see, all of this stuff happens because you have an older computer.
Yes.
You understand, that's really where this all is coming from.
Well, that's hers.
Yeah,
you know?
And so she, because this is going to get, it gets harder and harder. The old computer worked fine in its time, but as time advances, the old stuff doesn't work as well with the new stuff. So you really start to see, it's not that the old computers wear out, they become less and less compatible with the modern world. And that's what you're seeing, I think, right now.
It's just weird that old mini DV camcorders and brand new mini DV, it just,
it worked fine with the camcorders. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, it could be ADS. That's why I think the Canopus is more likely to work, because it's just a different chipset probably. But what you need to do is you need to find out, and this is, takes a little research, and you can go to places like Accelerate Your Mac, which is XLR, the number 8, Accelerate Your Mac, or Low End. A good one, I think probably the best, is lowendmac.com. And these are sites that are designed to support owners of older hardware.
Okay.
And you can go on there, and you can actually look at your model, and you could say, oh, what chipset did it use? And then do some Googling on the chipset and see if there were issues with it in compatibility with others. And that's the kind of work you can do. I'll do some right now. We'll see if I can find anything off the top of my head. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 1259, Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
June 3rd, 2006.
69 in Newport Beach, 84 in Santa Monica, and 92 in Glendale. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Yeah. Thank you, Jessica. Oh, I love the warm weather. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI. I was up in Toronto over the week doing my TV show, Call for Help. I go up there 5 days a week, months. 5 days a month to tape the TV show. And it was 100 degrees when I got there, which is, for Toronto, that's really hot. It's really hot. And it's, unlike here, it's humid. It's muggy. Ooh. It's funny. It gets such extremes up there. Because it'll also be, you know, 10 below, 15 below sometimes. You know, in the winter. So it's, I like it here better. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. I'm here till 2 o'clock. The Dr. Dean Adele Show coming up. Then it's a fresh John and Ken from 3 on. And I hope you'll stay tuned. A great afternoon's ahead for you on KFI. I'm here every Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 2 to talk high tech. We have listeners all over the world thanks to the internet. And I was joking about the Pirate Bay, which was a BitTorrent tracker site that had been brought down by Swedish police. And I was joking, you know, because I don't know if you've seen The Muppet Show, but they have the Swedish chefs. Do you ever heard of him? And I love Sweden, by the way. I've been to Sweden. I was in Stockholm this time last summer, and I had a great time. And I think the Swedes are fabulous. But I, for some reason, just can't get the Swedish chefs in my head. When I see the Swedish police raiding somewhere, I just think of them in little Muppets in blue uniforms going, Ferdefärndehängeberg. I know, that's mean. That's mean. So somebody who's listening in Sweden said, I don't know if I'm offended or not. He says, some Swedes are listening too, Leo. I know you are. I know. And I admit that it is something wrong with me. But I do, and I love Sweden, and I think it's a wonderful country. Among other things, they offer college educations for all citizens, free. And I'll tell you, you want to see one thing a country can do to make a difference in the quality of life in a country, that's it. Yeah, they pay higher taxes for it. But boy, does that make a difference. Anybody who wants a college education can get one. That makes up for the extremes of the weather. Absolutely. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. Robert in Bel Air. Welcome to KFI.
Yes, I have Zone Alarm as a firewall, and I, by thanks to your program, I've subscribed to DSL Extreme, which I'm Excellent. Extremely pleased with.
Great.
I have three computers in the house, and I have linked them together with a D-Link 108G wireless router because the Linksys router was not strong enough, so the D-Link hooks them together quite well. Now, I was told that the wireless router serves as a firewall.
It does.
And that I don't need Zone Alarm anymore, and
I thought
I'd pass that by you as a question.
It's a great question. It depends if you're a belt and suspenders kind of guy. The Zone Alarm does do things that a hardware firewall can't. And by the way, you're also firewalled through DSL Extreme. They do some protection. The hardware router does quite a bit. But Zone Alarm does a little bit more, and it's up to you whether you think you need it. I don't use it. I don't use software firewalls. So first let me explain what a firewall does so you understand. And I'm sure you know this, Robert, but just for everybody what understands what we're talking about here. If you just put your computer on the internet, you know, just plug into your modem and boom, you're on the internet. You know, not necessarily a big problem, but there may be services and things running on your computer that a bad guy could use to get into your system. This was a real problem 10 years ago when people were just sitting there naked on the internet running Windows file sharing, for instance. File sharing's turned on. The password system in Windows file sharing was notoriously weak. And so people were getting on it. You know, I could just see your computer and get and log into it and get your files, do anything I wanted to it. Whoa, that was bad. Now, Microsoft's fixed Windows file sharing, but the problem remains that if you're running a server of any kind and you're on the internet, it really opens a hole to a hacker. In addition, there are flaws in Windows and security issues with lots of programs. And so in some ways, not having protection when you're on the internet is a risky thing to do. Now, the way a router works... Actually, let me define what a firewall does, and I'll just explain what a router does. A firewall is just what it sounds like, a wall between you and the internet. Now, of course, you can't have a completely secure wall between you and the internet, or you wouldn't be able to surf the net or send email or do anything. So these walls have holes in them for outbound traffic that allow outbound traffic to go through. But no inbound traffic is allowed in unless you explicitly say, let this inbound traffic in. Now, a hardware router does that. It's like a valve. Think of it as a valve that allows anything to go out, but only incoming traffic that's been requested specifically is allowed in. So, for instance, when you surf the web, you type in a URL, your browser makes a request that goes right through the router out to the real world, and a page is sent back to you. Now, the page is sent back along the same channel, so the router says, oh, he wanted that. Let me send it along to him. But if a bad guy sends traffic along a different channel saying, hi there, big boy, the router says, I didn't ask for that, and just ignores it. It doesn't even respond. It just drops it. That's a pretty effective firewall. The only thing Zone Alarm does that's different is it's a little more active about watching outbound traffic.
Oh, I see.
So it will, unlike a router doesn't pay any attention to what's going out. Anything you initiate, it'll allow. Well, that means if there's a bad guy already on your system, he has free reign. What if he's already corrupted your system? He can do anything he wants. So, by the way, the same thing happens with Zone Alarm. You know, when you run it and you run a new program, Zone Alarm says, I see program XYZ is trying to access the internet. Is that okay with you? And you say yes. When you do that, you give it permission. And from then on, it doesn't ask. So you've actually punched a hole in the firewall for that protocol. Here's why I don't like software firewalls. So that is an added amount of protection, by the way. You know, because if you did get infected by something, the software firewall would pick it up and let you know. But this is why I don't like it. First of all, they add considerably to the complexity of the system and the unreliability of the system. Software firewalls are notorious for causing problems. Many of the calls I get here come from software firewalls.
That has occurred from time to time when I've added a new program.
Yep.
You're quite correct.
And they're of dubious... Now, this is more important. I'd be willing to put up with the inconvenience if they really... were of value, but they're of somewhat dubious value because many hacker programs just check to see if Zone Alarm's running, and if it is, they turn it off.
Hmm.
So, So what's the point?
Well, that's quite true, because on occasion, when I've installed a program and I've had a problem installing it, I contact the company, the manufacturer, and they say, well, do you have a firewall?
Right.
Yeah. They said, well,
turn it off.
Disable it right now and then install the program, then enable it again. And then, of course, it picks
fine.
Up the fact
right.
there's new software installed, et cetera.
Right. And bad guys are very aware of these programs. And because the way Windows works, you know, we're all running as administrator on Windows. We have full permissions. And by the way, then so does the bad guy when he's running on your account. So he is capable of turning off the firewall, just as you are.
Uh-huh.
You disabled it. He can too. Anything that you can do, he can do better. I think that's song.
That's a lot easier for it's easier to turn off a software firewall as opposed to a hardware
exactly.
like the router.
He cannot turn off the router. Now, there is, on many routers, a setting called Universal Plug and Play that gives the program the chance to do this. And so I recommend that is an important configuration on your hardware routers to disable Universal Plug and Play.
I see.
Because that will give a bad guy access to your router and an ability to disable it. But in general, I find the router, because it doesn't impinge in any way on the effectiveness of the system, it's not running on the system, it doesn't hamper anything, it just doesn't affect the reliability of your system. And yet you get 90% of the protection. The only thing you're missing is that outbound monitoring.
I see.
And I don't think that's that valuable. Now, there is one other thing that a software firewall is important for. If you are in a network, you get three or four desktops inside your firewall, inside your router, and you have a laptop, and you take that laptop and you go to work, and you get infected at work, and then you bring the laptop home. Now you've got an intruder in your midst. And that laptop can infect the rest of the computers on your network. That's what happened with the Zotab worm. It's why CNN got bit so bad, because executives went home with their laptops, and Monday morning they came in and they had the worm on their laptops, and they infected the entire network inside of CNN's very robust firewall protection.
I see.
So having software firewalls on your system can prevent that, and that is a good thing, because then you've got something inside the router. Now, for that, I recommend just leaving the Windows firewall on. It isn't at anywhere near as intrusive as Zone Alarm is. In fact, it's
but it'll at least serve some.
It will serve that purpose. The cross network infection that can happen if you bring an intruder into your network. And if you never use a laptop, you don't have to worry about it.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
so
then you don't have to worry about it. In my opinion, and there's certainly debate over this. And every time I say this, there are a lot of purists who say, "Oh, you're crazy, Leo." And those are the belt and suspenders types. And if you're a belt and suspenders type, go ahead. In my opinion, and I back it up with my actions, I don't run a software firewall. I consider the router more than adequate.
Very good.
Okay.
Well, you've certainly answered my question. I thank you very much.
Probably in a lot more detail than you want.
No, on the contrary.
Good.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Robert.
I appreciate the anatomy of the system.
Yeah. Well, it's an important thing to understand. It's unfortunate. We do have to be security experts in this day and age.
Yeah.
At least know enough to protect ourselves.
Sure.
Thanks, Robert.
Well, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
So, Zone Alarm, good program. One of the first software firewalls. I actually prefer a free one from Carrio called the Carrio Personal Firewall. I mean, why spend money if the Carrio First Personal Firewall does a good job? That's from sunbelt-software.com. If you're a belt and suspenders guy, is how I remember the name, then go to Sunbelt Software, sunbelt-software.com, and download the Carrio Personal Firewall. That does a good job. But every single software security solution, Norton Internet Security is notorious. Zone Alarm ain't so great. Every single one of them causes problems in the long run. And you have to decide, is it worth that when you can get 90% of that protection just with a router? And you probably already have a router. This is another point. All routers are firewalls. Doesn't have to say it on the box. If you have a Linksys, a D-Link, a Netgear, an SMC, doesn't have to say firewall. They are. That's how, by the very nature of a router. A couple of things you'll want to do to make it more safe is turn off Universal Plug and Play. Change the password in your router. I see so many people as I walk down the street that still have the Linksys is the name of their router, or default. And I know they probably still have the same default password in there too. Change that. And if you're on wireless, turn on wireless protected access, WPA. And then you've done everything you can do. Can you be hacked still? Of course you can. Can you be hacked if you're running software firewall? Of course you can. The things you must do are update your software whenever there's a critical update to Windows. Install it. Don't delay, but install it right away. Keep your eye out for other patches. If you listen to the show, I'll tell you when there's security issues. It's probably a good idea to run an antivirus I don't keep one running in the background because I don't want to slow my system down, but I have one on my system and I'll scan every week. Do protect yourself against spyware. A lot of that's behavioral. That's use Firefox, not Internet Explorer. Be careful about what sites you visit. Certainly don't install software when a site says, hey, you want to install my new Framets 3000? No. Don't click links in email. Don't open attachments in email. All of these are avenues for bad guys. If you change your behavior, follow simple security rules of thumb like running an antivirus, like having a hardware firewall, like not clicking links or opening attachments, you're going to be fine. You really are. It's not, I mean, we often paint a picture of a snake pit out there. Maybe it is a snake pit, but it's not that dangerous. The biggest danger on your computer is you, the operator. Change your behavior. That's why people with teenage kids are great risk, because teenagers have no sense at all. Change your behavior, modify it, be careful, don't click links in email. Tell your less computer literate friends about that one. That's how people really get in trouble. Don't click links in email. If you have to, type it in by hand, but do not click links in email. Those things, you'll be fine. I haven't had a virus or spyware in years. Not through any Herculean effort, just by sensible, common sense approaches. 120, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
KFI Weekends, the stimulating talk you want,
and the Southern California news you need.
KFI AM 640.
127, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kate is on the line from Costa Mesa. Hello, Kate. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Kate.
I bought a refurbished computer that was running Windows 2000,
okay,
and I upgraded it to XP.
Mm-hmm.
And my old computer was Windows 95, which I had upgraded to 98.
Okay.
When I moved the files from the old computer to the new computer, I had all kinds of I'm having all kinds of problems with the Word and Excel. It's like you start to type a letter and all of a sudden the keyboard is not...
Did you just try to move the applications?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got to reinstall.
You got to totally reinstall. Now, do I need to upgrade Excel and the Word?
No, it'll work fine. The old ones will work fine, but you can't just move applications over, unfortunately. There's too many files that aren't in those folders. You have to reinstall. Do you have the original disks, the install disks?
No.
Yeah, you got to find those because very few Windows applications can just be copied that way. Your data can be copied that way.
Yeah.
But applications have to be reinstalled.
If I do go ahead and buy a new Windows and Excel, or I think it's Office now.
It's Office. The latest is 2003. That'll work fine with Windows 2000. You don't need to upgrade that.
No, it's XP.
Oh, that's
now.
Right. You upgraded it. Yeah, that'll work fine. Yeah. You can get the upgrade version probably. Well, if you don't have the disk anymore, you may be out of luck. But you can't just move these over. If you can't find the disks, which I hate, that's too bad. You'll probably have to buy new versions. They're just not going to run. In fact, I'm surprised it runs at all. 129, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
This isn't the same old. A fresh, new John and Ken show awaits you each and every Saturday.
John and Ken, Saturday starting at 3.
KFI, AM 640. Oh, yeah. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A KFI. Let's see. Dean Dell's coming up in just about 20 minutes. Let me see how many calls I can get through here before then. We've got so many people been waiting on hold for so long. I'm sorry. Gunner, Edmond, Oklahoma. Hello, Gunner. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. I took your advice and I bought one of the new iMacs. It's the desktop model, the 20-inch.
How do you like it?
I love it.
Good.
I have a frustration, though.
Uh-oh.
I was trying to put together a slideshow for my daughter to just kind of capture her soccer season.
Yeah.
And as I was doing that, I obviously wanted to take some of her favorite songs and put on there.
Right.
What I found was that I had to conform the slideshow to fit the songs instead of the songs to fit the slideshow. I know you've talked about tools like J-Hymn in the past that allow you to kind of take songs out of iTunes and shorten them up, or...
Oh, you want to actually edit the song.
I do want to edit the song so that I can fit more of her choices, kind of time them to the themes of the pictures and things like that. And I know that J-Hem does no longer, it doesn't seem to work anymore with iTunes 6.
No. The only way really to do it that I know of right now is to burn it to an audio CD. So make a playlist with the songs you want to use on the slideshow. And this is copy protection. I hate copy protection. We shouldn't have to do this. It just drives me crazy. But burn it as an audio CD, okay? Not an MP3 CD, not an AAC CD, but an audio CD. Like you're going to play it in your car stereo. And then rip the audio CD as MP3s.
You know, I did that.
Or actually better waves. What?
It, under, I guess, iTunes 6.0, the DMA, or the Digital Rights Management, stays with it.
DRM stays with it?
Yeah, it would not. The burner, or the thing that I used to try and rip it back onto the hard drive, that it did not recognize the file format. And when it's weird, too, because when I burned it to the CD, the names of the songs and everything else changed as I was burning it to the CD in iTunes.
You're kidding.
From a playlist. I was going, I don't know if iTunes
something's gone.
Something
something's
very unusual.
I haven't heard this at all. This has always worked before. This is what they call the analog hole, and it's something actually that drives the record companies crazy, because there's nothing they can do about it, really. You know, except making a law saying you can't rip CDs, and they'd like to do that, believe me. So I'm gonna have to try it, but I've never. I think something's weird is going on, because it cannot. The reason this works is a audio CD can't have DRM in it. It won't work. It won't play. It has to be plain old Redbook CDDA audio. There's no way to keep that copy protection in there. Now, it may be that iTunes is keeping track of what you've burned. I don't think so, but if I were Apple and I really wanted to try to do this, and I don't think even Apple wants to do this. I think they're being forced to by the record companies. But let's say that I really wanted to be draconian. I guess I could keep track of what playlists you've ripped or burned. And then when I see you trying to rip that, get mad at you. Do you have another computer you can rip it on?
Well, actually, I was trying to do that off of a Windows computer.
Yeah.
And what was interesting, too, is I've ripped a lot of my own CDs onto that system.
Yeah.
And when I was trying to burn them back through a playlist, at first I tried it as MP3. It came back, and even some of the songs that I'd ripped off of a CD were saying that I couldn't do it.
Well, now here's another thing. This is Microsoft is in the act too. Are you ripping with Windows Media Player?
No, I was ripping with an old TDK program.
Oh, okay. Because Windows Media Player by default will set the copy protection bit on Windows Media Audio. So if you look at your settings in Windows Media Player, there's a checkbox where it says copy protect songs I rip. And they don't tell anybody this. So you're kind of adding copy protection when you rip stuff. There's some step I'm not seeing. This and I think there would be a howl if this were changed. This has always worked. I think there's something you're missing, or I don't know what's going on. But you got to make sure that you're creating a plain Jane audio CD.
Yeah, that's what I did in the burning preferences.
Okay, so it's a plain...
It plays just fine on any type of a normal CD player.
So we know the CD's okay.
Yeah, I mean, so it
and so you've tried to rip...
It says not recognized type.
And that's in... Oh, well, now, okay, wait a minute. Now, there's a couple of things going on. First of all, it may just be saying, I can't find this in the database, the CDDB database. I can't name them. They're all track 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. But it should still be able to import it. See, what it does with a CD, a commercial CD, is it looks it up and sees if it can find the track names. Maybe it's just telling you I can't find the track names.
Maybe so.
It wouldn't be able to, because it's your own compilation.
Well, you know, one of the things that came up is they all came up, you know, if I went into, like, Windows Explorer, and they would all show up as just, you know, a little green arrow on there showing as, you know, it recognizes that there's a track, but it doesn't know the name of it.
It wouldn't know the name. None of that stuff is preserved in an audio CD.
And so even when I grabbed those and I selected those and I said, you know, rip these, you know, onto the hard drive, it says I have no idea what these are.
So this is
I tried it on a couple of discs.
This is a puzzlement. So you're burning an audio CD, an audio CD that plays normally in all your CD players, so your CD players think it's an audio CD, but you've tried to rip it on both a Mac and a Windows machine, and in neither case can you copy those songs.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit, I didn't try ripping it on the Mac. I only tried it on the Windows machine.
You know, there's something not right. It's possible that Apple has done something, but I don't think it's very likely, and I don't even know how they would go about doing that. My suspicion is there's something gone wrong somewhere. And if Apple were to change all this, boy, would there be a howl. There would be such a howl. So,
yeah, because I've used Neuro, you know, Mix Master in the past to be able to, you know, adjust the song this time around.
Yeah, you should be able
whatsoever.
To. You should totally be able to. Well, I'll tell you what, when I get off in 15 minutes, I'm going to try it.
Okay.
I want to see, because that, it's not ideal because you're degrading the song quality a little bit because you're decompressing it from an AAC format into a wave format. Essentially, a CD audio is uncompressed wave files.
Yeah, she's not going to care.
No, she doesn't care. For a slideshow, that's fine. And then you recompress it into MP3. Or actually, I wouldn't recompress it. I'd leave it as a wave file. When you rip it, I'd rip it as a wave, so it's uncompressed. Then you're not degrading it at all. And you can edit it. When you edit MP3s, you convert it to wave anyway. I mean, that even if they don't tell you, that's what they do.
So I've been reluctant to upgrade to the newest version of iTunes.
I don't blame you.
It carries even more.
I don't blame you.
Digital rights management.
It's a fight between, you know, Apple. And I can't say it's Apple's doing. I think that they are contractually bound by the record labels. There's no way the record labels would have let them do this unless they were convinced that Apple would be aggressive in pursuing their rights and copy protection. And Apple has been. There used to be, as you said, JHIM was a great program created by DVD John, the guy who cracked the DVD encryption. He cracked Apple's, it's called FairPlay, and I think it's what it's called, encryption, and he cracked it and figured out how to take it out, and then they upgraded to iTunes 6 and they changed it. Now, John hasn't come back with a fix. I don't know, maybe he got old and he doesn't have time to do this anymore. He's not a high school kid anymore, but I'm surprised nobody's cracked it. There should be a way.
Maybe there's a reason.
Maybe they've got really sneaky. Well, I'll open this to the audience, and I will try it myself, and I will be angry at Gunner if they've done that, because that was the analog hole. That was our only way of doing what you want to do. And what it would make me do is say, well, I'm not buying copy-protected music anymore. That's it on that. I'm buying the CD and ripping it.
Well, I'm even concerned that about ripping CDs that I own on there, if it changes that protection once they're ripped on there too.
I don't think it does. I mean, now what they've been doing lately, of course, is they put copy protection on audio CDs, and it has to say, if the audio CD has, you know, when you go out and you buy the new Norah Jones song CD, which has copy protection on it, first of all, it doesn't call itself a CD because Philips won't let them, because it's not the standard CD format anymore, and it will say in big letters, relatively big letters, on the CD sleeve, copy protected or protection enhanced or copy enhanced or something. But you know what? This is how brain dead this whole thing is. All you have to do is hold down the shift key to rip this on the PC, and you can rip it on a Mac easily, and you just rip them. The copy protection all relies on Windows programs to run, or it won't be protected. So they haven't really, there is no good way to copy protect a audio CD. It wouldn't, if they did, it wouldn't play in your audio CD player.
Right.
So I'm thinking that there's no way that that Apple's doing something in there. There's something wrong somewhere, but I don't know. I can't quite figure out where it is. Let me try it. I'll try it in this break. Okay. I'm gonna burn a CD. Darn it!
I'll watch your show.
Thank you, Gunner.
Thanks, Leo.
Appreciate it. You're like the canary in the mine, warning us all of new copy protection and impositions.
I just hope I'm wrong.
I think you have to be, but I hope you are too.
Thanks for the call.
All right, take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to go rip. Where's a blank CD? I'm going to steal some music. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, or Stimulating Talk Radio.
When the big stories break, we're on it. KFI News, Fox News.
KFI, AM 640, more Stimulating Talk Radio. Let me see now. I've been trying to burn a CD here. I just took a cut from a Joe Ely CD that I bought at the iTunes Music Store, and trying to take advantage of what they call the analog hole, which is you take this copy protected music and then you make an audio CD out of it. the theory being that an audio CD cannot hold copy protection. Those cuts can't inherently be copy protected. And then you put it back in the computer and you say, convert this audio CD back into data. So I'm trying to do that, but I it's kind of hard to do that in a radio show at the same time. So I'll keep working. I've got it burned. Now I'm going to try to rip it. Dan in San Clemente, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing today?
Great, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, I've got a simple question, hopefully a quick answer. I need to get a medium-priced laptop, and I don't know much about laptops. My budgets are between $600 and $800, and the main application for me is I started to do some day trading on the side, and I need to be able to get into my account now. It's large enough for me to do trading all the time whenever I need to access
right.
my account.
So you want to have something portable and wireless that you can always get online with.
Bingo.
Yep.
But that's the main application. I'm not going to use it as a basic workstation. I'm going to keep my workstation in my office running like I have it designed right now. So the main application is just to be able to do my trades.
I think at Dell and Spiron, they start at $500. And they have three or four models under $1,000. Would be fine for you. I mean, it's a Pentium M. I mean, it's a Celeron, but it's not, you know, I mean, in fact, if you pay a little more, you can get a real Pentium M. And it's, you know, it's got a DVD player. So if you want to watch movies while you're day trading, you could do that. But your demands are not great.
No.
Almost all of these have built-in Wi-Fi.
I see.
And are able to surf. This is a 15-inch screen. So Dell is good. A Veritech makes good low-priced laptops. They're kind of a second-tier company, A-V-E-R-A-T-E-C-H. Fujitsu, I like very much. All of these companies have sub-$1,000 laptops.
Is Veritech on? Can you buy their laptops online?
A Veritech. Oh, yeah, you can buy anything online. I mean, Dell. Okay. You know, if we want to buy online, I just go to Dell. I think
just
Dell makes
Dell.
Make a quality product. The prices are right. They used to be really tip-top in tech support, and unfortunately, they've gone downhill. They've outsourced it to...
Yeah, well, that's what I heard about Dell. I heard on your show before, obviously, and a couple of other places, the customer service isn't so hot. But
nobody's very good. The margins are so slim now in computers that they can't afford to have good tech support. It's too expensive.
Yeah.
But you're not going to need tech support. This is pretty straightforward. You know?
No, it is. And I just purchased a new software program that'll expedite my trading, and they recommend 512 megabytes.
I agree. So the lowest price ones will probably have 256. Don't even consider it. Just add another 256. 512 is enough, though.
Okay.
And you know, you're not going to need a giant hard drive. You're not storing anything.
No, I'm not storing anything. My workstation in the office is just going to stay just as it is, and I was just hoping to get, you know, something moderately priced.
Here's what I'd recommend. An Inspiron B130. I'm looking at the Dell site.
B130.
Pentium M processor.
Uh-huh.
It comes with 512 megs, a 40 gig hard drive, a DVD burner, and a CD burner, and a DVD, you know, player. Wireless networking, $699.
Okay.
I think that's pretty stock. That's about just what you need.
Okay, great.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Awesome. Thanks,
all right. Have a great day. Take care. Still burning, still playing. I guess I won't get the answer before the show's over, but I will put something in the show notes. Well, wait, now here's the, okay. So the only, okay, now let me see if I can rip this. Let's import it. Import CD. This is the test burn. It's importing? Yeah, it's importing just fine. So, and this is the latest iTunes. So, no, I don't know what was going on with you, Gunner, but it's working for me. It's working for me. I'm importing this song that I just burned on CD. Burned it onto an audio, standard audio CD, and it's importing fine. So, I have a feeling there's something fishy going on in the way you've done it. Check the settings in your preferences. I'm out of time, but I'll be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. The show notes are online at KFIAM640.com. Click my name, Leo Laporte, under shows. That'll take you right there. And all the information about what we've talked about is there, but you can add comments to at the bottom. And will you join me tomorrow? Let's do it again tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Dr. Dean Adell's coming up next. Have yourself a great Saturday afternoon. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. At 1:59, Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
June 3rd, 2006.
Well, that's it for this edition of the Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.